You know, I was reviewing my notes just now, and somehow they seemed a lot longer and deeper 6 hours ago when I was working on them. We can see how this goes. As you know, we've been in a series, and we're winding down about who we are. And as a church body over the last couple of years, we've really put the emphasis on entering, walking in right relationship with God. And we realize that in order to do so, we have to have a firm understanding of who God is, which is why we studied John in length and in depth in other books. And we have to also have a firm understanding of who we are, or at least who we've been created and called to be. And the hope is that it will help guide and shape our vision as a group, as a body of believers. It'll help develop our strategy for as we move forward. We realize that as a church in our context in this place, we really need to work and focus on building bridges of relationship, of being relevant while not compromising, and being able to share the gospel through our lives and through our actions and through our love for one another and for the lost. As we've been in the series, we've looked at what it means to be a believer, what it means to have Christ in our lives, who we are. We see that we're called to be salt, that we're called to be light, that together we're a city set on a hill. If you think about a grain of salt, in and of itself, it's still powerful. If you take a grain, maybe a grain of sea salt, it's a little easier to grab, but throw it on your tongue and you know it's salt. Together, however, multiple grains of salt working together in a meal or as a preservative, as a coating, really enable the user to carry out the purpose of that element. Together, as God's bringing us together in community, as he's bringing us and forging us together in relationship and love, I'm confident that we will see God use us more and more. Similarly, light. One ray of light can still light up a dark room, but a few extra, I'm blanking on the terms, light bulbs put together will illuminate all that's around. We've looked at how we're called to be mature Christians, mature believers, maturing believers, how we're called to be authentic and walk the walk, not just talk the talk, how we're called to be servants and people who lay down their lives for others in love, and what that truly means and what that truly looks like in application. A couple weeks ago, we looked at great faith, and we also looked at community, how, as we just read in Colossians, how we are called to these things. We are called to have the love of God working in our hearts, to have the peace of God rooted in us as a plurality. It's not just a message or a memo to an individual believer. It can be applied as that, but it's a message and a memo really to a group, a body, a community of believers. How we need to see ourselves as a part of that living organism. A couple weeks ago, I ended a message with the thought that we need to change the way we think about church. It's actually, I guess, something I've talked about a lot lately, but one thing we need to change is this idea of, quote, joining a church or church shopping or whatnot. And we need to get back to the realization and as far as letting it form and inform our lives as we live, that we are the church. And there's a big difference there. And there's a big difference in how that's carried out today in today's culture. Ian Bounds said essentially that, you know, the church, and this is 100 years ago, the church is looking for better methods, but God is looking for better men and women. And that's something that we've been carrying through as a theme as we've looked at this study. I also said, I think I said a little bit more harshly, but I'll soften it today, is that, you know, we don't necessarily need, or if we want to see better churches, we need better Christians. shared with you how it was hard for me in San Diego to find the right fit for the church that I wanted, because I had my own idea, and it usually went with whatever whim and feeling and mood I was in on that particular Sunday, and so therefore I never found the church that I was looking for, because I had it kind of backwards. Today I want to talk about worship. I know it's a topic that we frequent. It's a little bit different. It's definitely a different perspective on it. I want to talk about worship in terms of creating space, creating a room for God to move. My working title, I was not at all happy with, but it was kind of funny. So my working title for this morning was Space Savers and Worshipers. But then whenever I say that to myself, I think of like a vacuum bag infomercial or something. Which I think is actually probably the opposite picture I want us to have this morning. So if you have any suggestions as we go through this morning's message, feel free to share with me after church. As you know, we are in this body as leadership, we're big proponents of understanding worship is more than just our Sunday morning singing and music or as a hymn, but really as worship ultimately and primarily being conducted through our lives. So with that in mind, what does that look like? With that in mind, how do we let God increase the level of our worship? Isaiah 54:1-5. This is our main thrust this morning. Sing, O barren one who did not bear. Break forth into singing and cry aloud, you who have not been in labor. For the children of the desolate one will be more than the children of her who is married, says the Lord. Verse 2. Enlarge the place of your tent and let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out. Do not hold back, lengthen your cords, strengthen your stakes. For you will spread abroad to the right and to the left, and your offspring will possess nations and will people the desolate cities. Fear not, for you will not be ashamed. Be not confounded, for you will not be disgraced. For you will forget the shame of your youth and the reproach of your widowhood. You will remember no more. For your maker is your husband, the Lord of hosts is his name. And the Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer, the God of the whole earth, he is called. Amen. This morning, the message is simple. It's that we are called, we have been tasked as we move forward in this Christian life to create more room for God. And there's a lot of ways to look at it. There's a lot of different messages to pull out of here. So if you've heard it differently, that's okay. One way to look at it is in John's words that, you know, I must decrease so that he may increase. I'm not quite sure if this analogy works, but I want to try it. You know, when you teach a child how to ride a bicycle, you can only do so much in preparation and in the pep talk and the rah-rah. And, you know, I guess you could, if, you know, you were a coach, you could draw a diagram on the board and map out the X's and the O's and try to teach geometry and physics to the five-year-old. But, and those are all in play. Also, gravity and, was it the theory of motion? But ultimately, you have to put the kid on the bike and give them a push and let them see how they do. In this analogy, we actually are that kid. We have to trust that God is going to be there running behind us, right? Trying to bear hug us in the air so we don't fall, or at least don't fall too hard. But we need to sometimes get beyond just the X's and O's, get beyond trying to think it all the way out to its conclusion or try to fully understand it before we act and before we move. and realize that God's calling us to just get on the bike. There's a place, there's a purpose, there are very real things at work and laws of motion, laws of gravity and physics that drive us getting on that seat. But ultimately, sometimes we have to be okay with not understanding and trusting. In a way that's saying, God, I'm going to allow you to set my vision. I'm going to allow you to set my course of action. I'm going to give you that space. Another, a little bit more simpler idea of what we're talking about this morning is, if you recall the triumphal entry with Jesus entering Jerusalem, if you think to any period movie of kings and queens and royalty, you can imagine the trumpeters or the messengers who would go and ride on before saying, make way, make way. Make way for the king. The king is coming. Make way. Make a road, make a path, for the king is coming. Yet so often in our lives, when our king is coming, we fill that space with everything else that doesn't belong. We do just the opposite. Another way to look at it, I think, is a term we're familiar with, I think especially around here, but I think there's a tendency to put God in a box. Whether it's through our own unbelief or through our own hesitancy, whether it could even be through systematic theology where we want to follow ways of interpreting the Bible more than reading the Bible for what it is. But we put God in a box and we say, God, you know, great, I believe in you. You're great. You're good. But I don't understand that part of you, so I'm going to deny that that's one of your attributes. And it doesn't work. A lot of times we're hindered by what we don't understand. And we have to allow God to work through us, and get beyond it. See, I believe in the God of the Bible, period. He's unchanging, everlasting. Isaiah 54, what was the context? The context was this, is Israel, they had many dark periods before. But this very well, I think in a lot of circles, was considered their darkest. They're in the midst of exile in Babylon for 70 years and oppressed, enslaved even. In the chapter prior to 54, we have a very famous or very well-known and understood chapter about the coming of Christ. And here we have this idea of enlarging the place of your tent. So in one of Israel's darkest hour, through the prophet Isaiah, God would send to implant his story, his version of the future, really his all-powerful, his all-knowing hope in their heart. Think about it, as a people, and likely as individuals, they are greatly oppressed, feeling desolate, feeling deserted, feeling like there was no way out, realizing that they're in a foreign land, being ruled by foreign people, no ties, no connections to their homeland, no vision for the future, feeling very hemmed in, even claustrophobic. And it was in that place that God chose to send his word. Possibly one of the, not possibly, the greatest message of hope in the history of humankind, and especially in the history of Israel. He chose to send that message in that moment in time. It wasn't so much during the time of David. It wasn't so much during the time of the great kings. There were pictures, there were foreshadowments, there were still prophecies of the coming king, of Jesus Christ, but not to the extent and the specificity of their time in Babylon. So Jesus, or God, sends this prophecy and sends this picture of the coming king, of the Redeemer, not just of Israel, but of mankind, if you look at the scriptures. And then in the next chapter, he says, basically, I'm going to reverse these things. I'm going to reverse your barrenness. I'm going to reverse the desolation. Get ready. Enlarge the place of your tent and let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out. Do not hold back. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. Let's break that down. Enlarge the place of your tent. Remember, this, at least historically, was a nomadic people, or at least they had understood that very well because of their time in the wilderness. What's interesting is the correlation to the tent of God, the tabernacle of God, the tabernacle of Moses during that wilderness period. The tabernacle for Moses and for the people of Israel who were coming out of Egypt and on their way to the promised land was really the symbol, the comfort, the knowing, the tangible evidence of God's presence, not just on earth, but of with them through the ark and through the covenant. And so we have this idea of the tabernacle of God's presence on earth with man. And we have this command, really, to enlarge the place of your tent. In my terminology, today at least, it's give God more square footage. I've been almost neurotically looking at Zillow and looking at real estate and having working for the city, I understand a little bit more than I used to about floor area ratio and square footage and lot size, and some of this is going way over your heads, and some of this you're going, oh, I know that. Some of you worked in it for a long time. And so I find myself looking at the square footage of a house and going, okay, well, if it's on that size lot, there's really not more room to work. Or it's a small house, but there's a big lot. I wonder what's allowable from the city to be able to expand. And then I look at the bank account, but that's another story. Give God more square footage. True surrender, true worship is the ability to lower ourselves, to empty our being of ourselves more each day, to allow for God to make us in his image, to craft us in his image, to fill us with his love, fill us with his gifts, fill us with the things, with the traits, fill us with him. And I think there's plateaus in our Christian journey, especially for those who have been on it for a while, where we things are really good. We've got a lot of testimony, seen a lot of answers to prayer. Feel like we've come a long way, but before we realize it, we've kind of rested and sat back on those laurels and stopped making room, stopped saying, God, what next? What else can I change? Where else can I grow? What else can you do? What else can I give? And a lot of times that's where trial comes, and it's God, in a way, gently forcing us to let go of some of those things, to purge ourselves of some of those things and say, I'm calling you higher. I'm calling you deeper. Enlarge the place of your tent. You know, increase the footprint of what you allow God in. And really, it needs to be our entire being. As a body, as a church, it can look like many different things as far as setting a vision and creating ministries and opportunities. You know, when we first started, we started in here, and Pastor Chuck and Daniel were here with their families, and, you know, they probably filled the front row and, you know, had 10 rows behind it. But gradually God began to add and build. And the church doubled when there was a family of 10 that came. Actually, probably tripled, I don't know. But eventually we started talking about, well, do we need to go to two services? Or what do? We've got people standing on the counter and back. Almost literally. And so what we did is we literally picked up and moved downstairs and increased the footprint of the church on Sunday morning. You know why I'm okay with empty seats? Is because I know that that means God can fill them. I always want there to be an element of empty seats, no matter how big the church or no matter what church I'm in. I want there to always be room in my heart for more of God. No matter where I am, what stage of my life I'm in, no matter how great I think I've become, which, Lord willing, I won't. Because we always need more of Him. Make room for Him. Increase the footprint. Give Him more square footage in our hearts, in our vision, in our understanding of our calling, in our understanding of what He wants to do with our lives. Increase His footprint in our lives in terms of our obedience to Him. May we have a greater capacity to obey. May we have a greater capacity to understand. Secondly, let the curtains of your habitations be stretched out. So as we increase the footprint, we realize that naturally we will be stretched. And the coverings and the way things looked and the way things were hemmed in the past will change. And it may even be a little discomfortable. That's definitely not a word. Uncomfortable. There may be some discomfort. That's an interesting one for all you English teachers. Now I'm thinking about discomfort and uncomfort. You can see how my mind works and is not working right now. Let the curtains of your habitation be stretched out. Some of us go, God, I just installed those treatments, those beautiful turquoise window dressings. You didn't know I knew these words. They are perfect. I just got them there. They fit right. They look good. They let just enough light in. And God's saying, no, no, no. It's time to blow out that wall again. We can't rest on the last stop. We need to realize that God is calling us to increase our capacity. He wants to push us for more, to create more of Him in our lives. It's stretching. It's growth. There are growing pains, but it is good. Remember, the tabernacle of Moses was never meant to contain and to constrict who God was. In reality, as He's leading them through the desert, He's leading them by day with a cloud and by night with fire. The tabernacle, the tent, wasn't meant to contain, but was meant really, in my mind, to inspire, to say, hey, Israel, I am here, I am with you always. I've come to dwell with you. That tent, the tabernacle, the temple of God, as Paul would say, post-Christ and Calvary is us. And so just as the physical tent, if God were limited in space, which He's not, but would have had to have been expanded, our lives, our understanding, our being must be stretched and enlarged, for we are now that tabernacle. We are now the temple of the Holy Spirit. And here's the thing, this is greater the greater filling that we have, the greater testimony that God will have, the more effective, I believe, our role will be in this kingdom. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. Now, here's a key. One perspective on this, I'm not going to really go into it, but one way of looking at it is lengthen your cords. Our prayers are far-reaching. We need to steep ourselves more in prayer, more in petitioning at the throne of God and to see him move. And I'm not saying that's not the right way to look at it, but I think a better understanding is to, if you think about a tent and the cords and the stakes, it's really a link, a foundational link, a structural link that firms everything up. If you have a tent and you don't tie it to the ground put the stakes in the ground, tie it to the stakes, you're risking catastrophe. I remember I was in Argentina. We were working on this little farm, building a pig pen. And we were sleeping sleeping out in this pasture, and we had tents. And the thing about Argentina is, we might have rain here, and we get wet. In Argentina, it's kind of like getting run over by a bus, a big wet bus. And we had borrowed tents, and we weren't there for very long, so it's not like we had all our gear with our coffee makers and our big lean-to tents from Costco and whatnot. And so the storm came through, and really not far into it, I look at the guy who's next to me in the tent. I go, "Is it raining in here inside?" And he goes, yeah, I just felt a little drop. And that's, for some reason, I reached my hand back. And instead of reaching my hand back and feeling the side of the tent, I reached my hand back and feel a puddle inside the tent. And then I've got my eyes open now, and we had a rain fly over the tent, but now I can actually see up, and I see the stars, because actually part of the storm had passed, but you're not supposed to see the stars when you're in a tent and the rain flies over you. As my eyes are adjusting, I see one of the poles is shattered and poking through the roof of the tent. Why did I get into the story? The structure of the tent wasn't stable because we hadn't set it up right and because it wasn't anchored well enough. And so one of the poles flew through and broke through the tent. We ended up sleeping in the farmhouse on top of the dining tables. Lengthen your cords and strengthen your stakes. Shore up your foundation. Get ready. Not only make room, but do it right. When you don't have that anchor, the structure is at risk. When we're anchored in the Word of God, when we're anchored in our understanding of who He is, when we have driven those stakes deeply, those ties, and we have tightened up and lengthened those cords as we've grown, but they've still stayed taut and rigid. We will have the strength we need to endure the wind and the rain, but also to allow God to fill that place, to bring that increase in our lives. Does that make sense? Sometimes we grow and it's good. And like we were saying earlier, unfortunately, sometimes we grow as believers and our pride grows with us. And that cord isn't lengthened and those stakes aren't driven in deeper. And we actually weaken as we grow. I want to be a church. I want to be a body of believers that not only makes room for God, but stays on its foundation. Maintains the deep ties to who he is and to what his word says. And let that form the structure and let that form the rigidity that we need continue to move on and allow God to fill that space. Back in the middle of those couple of verses, it says, do not hold back. I didn't forget about it. I just wanted to end with it. Do not hold back. See, my opinion, this is where worship comes in. This is where our willingness to decrease so that he may increase, our willingness to get lower and lower and lower to the ground so that he may be glorified, is essential. You know, we often reserve our best for those we love most, or at least those we want to impress the most, maybe not even love. When I met Renee and we were going on our first date, my car had never been cleaner. And it's never been cleaner since. I think I might have even worn shoes. Maybe not. The God of this universe saw fit to send his best to a people who were disobedient, to a people who hated him, to a people who were lost in sin, to a people who were rebellious, to a people who could not, for just more than a couple years, follow his commandments. Jesus gave his best to the people who tried to stone him, to the people who tried to run him off a cliff, to the people who disrespected him, to spit on his face, who lashed him with whips, who would not give him a place to lay his head. He gave his best for them. May our cry be that, God, may you have my best, because you gave your best for me. If you think through the Bible, you could list 10 times more of what I'm about to give you, but it's littered with men and women whose testimony is that they gave God room in their lives. They allowed God to form a bigger vision for the future for them. They allowed God to establish a larger calling than they saw in front of them. They allowed God to cause them to go deeper. They allowed God to expand their tent. And we have their testimony in the Word because of their obedience, because of their ability to catch on to his vision. Isaiah himself, the book that we're studying, saw this vision of heaven and said, and heard the call and said, Lord, here am I. Send me. Send me into that space. Make my life expand to the point that you can use it, that you can sanctify it for your use. Ruth, having nothing, created the space by going into the field and picking up after the harvesters and picking up the scraps, and then began to see a little bit of favor, and she could have stopped and said, my basket is full, I'm going home. But instead, she realized what she had to do, and so she laid at Boaz's feet, and she created the space, the room, the opportunity for God to transform her life and be grafted in to the heritage of the Redeemer. Elijah in the wilderness, we've talked about him recently. He created the space and the room and the place for God to move, for God to speak to him, for Elijah to hear that voice. Realizing that it wasn't in the fire, it wasn't in the wind, or it wasn't in the earthquake, but it was in that lonesome cave. But that he was right where he needed to be in order to hear that voice. Isaac, returning to his father's land, grandfather's land, redug Abraham's wells and prospered because of it. He had to physically get in there. He had to physically act on what he knew would be his inheritance, and then from there, God was able to multiply it. Gideon's wool, I've always been an apologist for Gideon. He created the space for God to confirm his word, to confirm that he was who he said he was, the word of the angel and really God himself to his heart. So God, he said, you know, all right, Lord, if you're real, do this. If you're real, let me see you. Sometimes we're afraid to ask that question. David, shepherd in the pasture, solitude in the wilderness or in nature with the sheep, letting God mold him, letting God speak to him, creating that space in his life without the distractions of the world to let God make him something great. Jesus in the middle of the storm. He could have just prevented the storm from ever happening, but he knew that his disciples needed that lesson. He created the space for God, for him, to make themselves known, for God to make himself known to his disciples in that way. So that they would forever know that he, in the middle of the storm, can calm the sea and bring stillness and peace to your heart. See, in Isaiah, kingdom-wise, ultimately it meant more space for more people. If you read through chapter 54, it's really talking about a future harvest for the Gentiles to be able to be grafted in, where there was barrenness, the mother would give birth. For us, it's the same thing. Israel's freedom was tied to fruitfulness, to their inheritance. God was saying, expand the reaches of your tent. Let the curtains of your habitation be stretched. Lengthen the cords and strengthen your stakes. Because not only, Israel, will you be delivered from this bondage, but I will fulfill the promises I've given to you from the beginning. Not only that, but I will make way for the Gentile to also receive that blessing. They were physically, politically, socially oppressed and confined. And God is saying, in your hearts, make way. In your understanding of who I am, make room. Because in that, that is where I will move. In that, that is where you will find true freedom. We talked about this the other night. Really, then, we've been given freedom so that others may be free. We celebrated Veterans Day just a few days ago. And I don't think there's much greater or easily understood example of laying down one's life, of daily surrendering yourself for a greater cause or for somebody else than our men and women in service. Some, the saying goes that some, all gave some and some gave all. As a body of believers, we see that natural example. We see the spiritual and the example of, and the best example in Jesus Christ laying down his life, giving his best. As Americans, you could probably say that others have given their best for us physically, in the flesh. And then also spiritually, Jesus, on all sides, we've been given somebody else's best. can we not give our best to God? For those of you who served, thank you. For those that we know that are serving and families, thank you. We've been given spiritual freedom from the confinement of sin, from the enemy, so that we can bring freedom to others. I don't look at these empty seats and say, oh, darn, and become Eeyore. And, well, maybe we should take out some rows. I look at these empty seats and say, let's do it again. God, fill them again. I don't care about filling them with, I don't necessarily care about filling them with Christians from other churches. That, if that's what God deems necessary, so be it. But I care about filling them with the lost from our work, from our home, from our families, from our sports teams, from our movie nights, from the bookstore. So this is part of the vision, is simply make room for God. We're not too old, we're not too weak, we're not too young, we're not too inexperienced to say, God, I am yours and you are mine. Take all of me. May I decrease so that you may increase, so that your kingdom may come. Let's pray. Father, your will be done, not ours. Your kingdom come. Lord, help us to hear and catch that vision that you gave to Israel in the middle of their darkest hour when they, at least with their worldly eyes, could not see their deliverance, could not see how possibly you could fulfill your promises to their nation. And yet you called them to make room in their hearts and in their understanding and their relationship with you for what you would do. And Father, as the people who are now on the other side of that timeline and have seen your faithfulness through generation to generation, may we take you at your word, realizing that you've given us your all, you've given us your best. And really, you're calling us to do the same. Lord, thankfully, our best isn't the value of the gifts we can give, but is the extent to which we can give up and give it over to you and surrender. So Lord, help us to learn to worship you more each day, to surrender more each day, to lay our lives down each day. Father, if it's gathering with friends to worship on our own, and creating a space for your spirit to move, may it be so. If it's gathering with brothers and sisters to pray more frequently, to see your hand move through prayer, may it be so. If it's gathering in our homes to just sit in your presence, to commune with you, let it be so. As a church, if it's creating more ministries, or if it's going outside our comfort zone, or if it's adding more chairs, may we create the space and the room for you to move and fulfill your promise. Father, help us to catch your vision, to enlarge our idea, our understanding, our relationship of who you are. in it all, may you bring the increase. Let's stand and close in worship. So